In Viking times, a thing was a gathering, a place where leaders and warriors could meet and talk.
In the 21st century, our thing is a virtual place where history academics and enthusiasts from around the world can come together to share knowledge. We're your hosts, Miranda Schmiederer
and Lucas Norton. So hold on to your helmets for this episode of that Jorvik Viking Thing podcast. So here we are back in the gallery at Jorvik Viking Centre for another walkthrough of one of our display cases.
We've gone through and we've talked about like traded items, and we've talked about skeletons and burials and things. We've talked about some of our special exhibits. What are we talking about today?
Some of the little nitty-gritty personal items that were found on the street. So this is some of the very first things that you'll see when you enter the gallery. Ignore the lovely weapons, we're not talking about those yet. So skip past the weapons and you will see a display case full of little objects found on Coppergate. These are the kind of things the people of Viking Age York may have worn or carried about their person.
So these items are probably going to tell us quite a lot about like people specifically, rather than like, you know, when we looked at the burials, that was about one person. But this will hopefully help to give us a better idea of kind of the group of people living here.
Yeah. And when I say personal items, I'm afraid we don't have things like trousers and dresses, swords. Ignore the first case. We didn't find stuff like that. Just thrown around the streets, of course.
No.
The kind of people who lived here on Coppergate, they're not carelessly throwing away things like that or losing them accidentally. I've never accidentally lost a whole pair of trousers before.
No.
It's a mixture of small objects that have been lost, falling out of a Viking's, I guess, pockets, air quotes, or they've been thrown away in rubbish pits.
Okay.
Because they've been broken or not deemed worth recycling. Very bad for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so almost everything you see here is made of metal. We'll start with the knives, shall we?
Oh, of course, yes.
There's quite a few here. Not all of them, though. Coppergate produced one of the largest collections of early medieval knives from Northern Europe.
Wow.
Very, very well preserved as well, quite unusually so. There were 211 early medieval knives found on the sites. Mercifully, we do not have 211 in this case.
I think that would be overkill, yeah.
We've got 9. So the reason these are so well preserved is those lovely anaerobic, oxygen-free conditions.
We keep kind of talking about those, but I think they're so important because the reason we have all of these artifacts is because of that oxygen-free soil.
Yes, definitely.
It helped preserve everything that we've talked about so far, but it's interesting that like a waterlogged soil would help with metal as well. You would think that it would go rusty.
Yeah, it's because it's the oxygen that's in the water that would cause it to rust.
Right.
There's just no oxygen whatsoever, so the iron can't become iron oxide rust, which preserves it very well. Sorry, rust doesn't preserve it well, I should say. The oxygen, the oxygen-free soil preserves it very well. So we've got a lot of metal objects here. Now, these knives, they vary a lot. They've told us a lot about Viking Age ironwork. We could do a whole episode about that, but not today, thank you very much. We'll do blacksmithing for a later date. They all vary in shape and size, so they're not mass-produced in the way that your IKEA butter knife might be. And it's worth pointing out, these are not weapons. Very small, aren't they? These are practical tools used for all sorts of functions throughout the day. So we're talking, you know, food preparation, crafting, all sorts of objects. There were also leather knife sheaths as well found on site, which tell us that the Vikings on the streets are wearing the knives on their belts.
Oh, a bit of decoration, but also probably practical, isn't it?
Yeah, always there when you need it. I mean, not that long ago, people used to carry knives around with them all the time for that sort of thing. It's like having a Swiss Army knife with you all the time.
Yeah.
Now we're a little bit cautious about walking down the streets of York with a knife visibly on show. So a couple of examples we have here even still have wooden handles attached to them as well. Again, preserved by that lovely oxygen-free soil. One of them has even got a bit of decorative brass wire inlaid into the handle too, which is very nice.
Nice, isn't it?
Looks a bit like gold, but it's not gold. It's brass. That'll be a running theme, the stuff from the Coppergate collection.
Kind of dupes, you know, like knockoffs.
Yeah. One particularly cool one as well, just worth pointing out, is the folding knife. So,
that seems very modern to me. So interesting that they would have had that.
So you can see there's a little kind of rivet, a hinge where it will unfold. This is probably a specialist tool for some kind of craft. This is a street of craftspeople, after all.
Yeah.
We just don't know what the craft it was designed for actually is, unfortunately. But these people, they're not just mass-producing identical plain objects. They've got very kind of bespoke knives that they each would have owned.
It's interesting to me that, you know, finding 211 what are essentially weapons kind of just helps to show how domestic the Vikings were that lived in this area. These are tools for their work or for eating or whatever. They're not stabbing people with these pretty little weapons, are they?
Yeah, definitely.
What have we got next, then?
Well, if you've got knives, you need to keep them sharp as well.
Yeah.
So we've got a few hone stones here. There are a lot of hone stones scattered throughout the gallery. I think we may have mentioned some before in the trade and travel case.
Yeah.
But these are essentially small stones that you could carry about, again, on your person. They've got little holes in the top, which have been perforated through so that a string or a leather thong could go through. You hang it on your belt, it's always there when you need it, and it's there for sharpening your blade.
That makes sense. So you'd have your knife hanging from your belt and then the hone stone next to it for if you're crafting and you find that it's a little bit dull. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, and if you're into geology, I mean, who isn't? we can also work out what types of stone these are made from and therefore where they have come from. So some of the examples from Coppergate are made of types of sandstone that come from the Pennines, that mountain range that goes like a spine through the middle of England.
Mm-hmm.
So fairly local to York. And others are made out of schist, which comes from Norway, so Viking homelands. And looking at the chronology of the site as well, the local ones are dominant in the early period when the Vikings arrive.
Yeah.
And then the more exotic Norwegian examples become the more dominant type later on.
That makes sense to me, because I suppose when they first got over here, they weren't necessarily bringing big heaps of rock with them, were they?
Yeah.
They would have been using what was here. But as they kind of became more established in the area, they could import.
Yeah, so it shows how the Vikings have kind of expanded the city and boosted international trade.
Yeah.
This isn't anything like, you know, silk or spices, but it's something. It shows how the city is expanding under their control.
Yeah. So next, we've got some other pretty little metal objects.
Yeah, lots and lots of metal in this case,
there
isn't there?
Yeah.
So these are examples of keys.
Yeah, they don't really look like, you know, the set of house keys I've got in my pocket at the moment.
They do not. They look nothing like keys, do they? But they are definitely keys. A specialist has told me so. These are examples of padlock keys for, I think, a box padlock, this specific type.
Okay.
We have, much further along in the gallery, a beautiful padlock with a lucky decoration.
Yep.
And a very similar key next to it.
Yep.
So when we get to that point in the gallery, in another episode, we'll talk all about that to explain how it works.
I think that's a bigger conversation we'll have to save for another day, isn't it?
It's difficult to describe without showing a physical example to you, but these keys here, they would have been hung from a belt.
Mm-hmm.
The fact they're decorated shows that they're showing them off a little bit, I would imagine. And these are not just, well, whilst they are unique for the individual lock, they're not unique in the sense that keys were so rare. Dozens and dozens and dozens of keys were found at Coppergate for a wide variety of different types of locks as well, not just padlocks. But we'll save a full discussion about, I guess, Viking locksmithing when we get further down the gallery to our lovely padlock.
So what about these tiny little, they kind of look like needles or something.
Yeah, so these are dress pins that we've got here.
Yep.
Once again, lots were found, about 60 of them.
Wow.
We got 6 on display here though, because we don't want to show you 60 individual pins. Now, they're made out of copper alloy.
Yep.
They do have a little bit of decoration on them. They're not completely plain. The heads of them have a decorative shape. And these would be used on Viking Age outfits,
mm-hmm,
to secure all sorts of different bits together. We don't know where these would be used on people's outfits specifically. They could be used for a headscarf, for example. It's only really when you find a grave and things like this are in specific locations in a grave around a skeleton, you know exactly where they were used.
Yeah.
These are just found scattered across the sites, really.
I mean, that makes sense. They're so small, and if you're wearing them in your headscarf or something, you might not notice when one kind of shifts its way out.
Exactly. It's like losing one earring or something like that. Alongside these are another type of copper alloy pin. These ones are much larger.
Yeah,
these
more substantial, probably a bit harder to lose these, I would think.
Yeah, so there's much fewer of these that were found on the site. We've got 2 on display here, made of copper alloy with a big ring at the top. And I think we've spoken about these in the trade and travel case.
Yeah, we did. There were some ring-headed pins that I think you said were from Ireland or Irish-inspired, maybe?
Yes. So these are slightly exotic, all the way from sunny Dublin, possibly. These have been found in Viking Age graves across Northern Europe. And we know, we're pretty certain how these were used, because the position they're found in.
Right.
Around the shoulder area, we think these are used to pin together a cloak.
Right,
it's a brooch for a cloak, essentially. That ring, you attach a cord to it.
Mm-hmm.
You loop it around the end after you've stabbed it through your cloak and secure it in place.
Right, okay.
And we particularly associate these with Viking colonies in Ireland, what we call Hiberno-Norse fashion.
Yeah.
So along with our bits of rock from Norway, this is a good indication of the trading and political links that Viking Age York had with Dublin and other towns in Ireland. At certain points in the 10th century, both York and Dublin were ruled by the same dynasty of Viking kings. I think about 6 or 7 kings of Jorvik are also kings of Dublin or kings of Waterford.
So this just kind of shows those links. That's really interesting.
Mm.
Now, I notice also in this case, we've got these look like they must also fasten clothes. They're little pretty decorated kind of flat pieces of metal. Can you tell us more about those?
Yes, we've got 3 examples of hooked tags. So very small, just a few centimetres big, on the right-hand side of our case here. And again, made of copper alloy. Some have got some decoration on them. One's got a lovely ring and dot pattern, and the other has got a type of Scandinavian art style called ringerik. I think that's how you say it. I'm sorry, Scandinavia, if I butchered your language. The one language of Scandinavia. There are multiple countries, aren't there, actually? Forgot about that. At the end of each of these are 2 holes, and this is where you would stitch these onto a garment.
Yeah.
The other end has a little hook on it, and that would allow you to fasten it onto an item of clothing. So very much like the dress pins. We can't 100% precisely know where these are used on somebody's outfit, but elsewhere there are graves where these have been found.
Yeah.
So that gives us a good clue. And in these graves, they're found everywhere, in all sorts of positions, all over the body. One quite nice interpretation I've come across from an object found in Rome. I'm not sure what period this is. It's probably not Viking, it's Rome, of course. But very similar object is used to fasten a purse together.
Ooh.
So a little fabric purse, I presume. Quite often today, men who dress in their lovely Viking outfits for reenactments, they will use these hooks to fasten their woolen leg wraps together, mm-hmm. also known as winningas. And that's definitely one good possibility, because they have been found around the sort of knee leg area in graves. And whilst it's very, very accurate, I personally don't recommend doing this, because I used to do it all the time. I bought a lovely replica pair of these hooked tags.
Yeah.
And attach them onto my lovely leg wraps. Yep. They look beautiful. They began to shred the fabric, though.
Oh, no!
On my beautiful diamond swill leg wraps. And those leg wraps cost more than the hooked tags
themselves. I was going to say, maybe this was like a weird backward status symbol. Like, I'm so rich, I can afford all the leg wraps in the world.
Well, maybe I was just wearing them like an idiot. So I don't know. So now I use a lovely piece of coloured wool to tie them together instead.
Fair.
If you sit perfectly still all day, maybe they are fine though. Maybe it's for a rich person who just sits around the house.
I am desperate to know more about these brooches. I do know what these are. People still wear brooches today, but they're quite interesting to look at, really. All different sizes and decorations on them.
Yeah, so let's leave behind the boring plain knives and pins, I suppose. And we want the lovely artwork pieces we've got here. So there are lots of different types of brooches that were found at Coppergate. 9 of these are what are called disc brooches.
Right.
So it's a circle of metal with a pin and a catch plate on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Now these are used to secure all sorts of different bits of clothing together. They're in all sorts of sizes we've got here as well. Some are very, very big.
Yep.
And some are just a couple of centimetres big. Very, very tiny.
Yeah.
There's a few very small examples on the bottom right of the case, and a particularly large example on the shelf in mm-hmm. the middle. Now, once again, these are made of stuff like copper alloy, also lead. So we're talking very, very cheap metals.
Mm-hmm.
And these are probably mass-produced by metal workers in Viking Age York. So when we talk about industry and industrial revolution, we often think about the 18th and 19th century, don't we? But the Vikings really do have a kind of industrial revolution here in York. They're mass-producing things. things, just not using factories, using their hands, unfortunately. So quite possibly they're made by a metal worker here on this street.
Yeah.
A lot of these metal objects, I should mention, are found clustered around one particular household on the streets.
Oh, right, okay.
Also stuff like metalworking tools, along with stuff like iron slag, the leftover products from metalworking.
Mm-hmm.
And on our ride, that is the house where there's a man and his son sharpening their knives. Yeah. That is the blacksmith's house.
So a trade.
So this kind of evidence is why we've selected that kind of profession for the ride in that property.
Yeah.
So the examples that we've got here, they may have actually been thrown out because there's a mistake in them when they've been finished.
Mm-hmm.
One of them even shows a kind of visible bubbles in it, which looks like a poor quality casting. They've gone, oh, yuck, and chucked it away, and then tried again, and someone found the chucked away one 1,000 years later. Should start with the big one, the prettiest one?
Absolutely.
So this huge one here, this is made of a cheap lead alloy. Might have been plated with silver, potentially, though, to make it look a bit fancier than it really is. Lead, of course, is cheap and toxic, unlike silver. If you look at it, you can see it's got these 11 bands and circles going around it of decorative beading. And in the middle is a central decorative scroll motif. And it's actually quite similar to examples that have a coin in the middle of them.
Right, okay.
Which is very much like what we've spoken about before.
With the British trade from the East, from the British Museum, yeah.
It's also really, really similar, this one, to another disc brooch that was found in Hedeby. Now, this is a Viking town that is now in northern Germany. That example was made of gold.
This one is not made of gold.
This one is not. This is poisonous lead. So this is like a cheap imitation knockoff, I think. And this is a running theme with the stuff from Coppergate. Coppergate feels like one of those markets that you might come across where they'll sell counterfeit Gucci sunglasses or like a fake Dolce & Gabbana handbag. And I can imagine this large one here, it's so big, you want it prominently on display. This could be a cloak one, I would imagine, up at your shoulder. Maybe it's covered in silver, you've polished it, lovely and shiny. Smaller ones here, though.
Yeah.
Probably not for cloaks, I'd imagine.
They wouldn't hold much, would they?
Yeah. One of them's got a lovely geometric design on it of triangles and circles. Very pretty.
Yeah.
Not quite symmetrical, though, which kind of throws me when I look at it. I go, ooh, I'd throw that in the bin. And we've also got one that looks like a tiny version of
the big
one.
Yeah.
But there's three here which look very similar.
Yeah.
Slightly different each one, though. They're not identical.
No.
And these are quite interesting because they have a style of art on them which we more commonly associate with Viking Age East Anglia.
Right, okay.
So that is the east of England, the counties of Norfolk and Suffolk, and dozens and dozens of these types of brooches are found across the east of England, and almost none are found in northern England.
Weird.
So we talk about Anglo-Scandinavian fashion.
Mm-hmm.
There's even kind of microcosms of Anglo-Scandinavian fashion. We have Eastern Anglo-Scandinavian and Northern Anglo-Scandinavian. I think maybe they found one brooch like this in Lincoln and these few here in York. And that's pretty much it for Northern England.
Right.
Now, it's got an animal on it.
Yes.
A very strange, stylized animal.
I cannot figure out what it's meant to be.
Well, it's kind of got long limbs, long tail, a very long neck, and we call this a backwards-facing beast. It's kind of looking backwards at its tail. I don't know what it's supposed to depict here. They look similar, but also different.
Yeah.
Dinosaur? They
look like dinosaurs.
They've got a bit of a brontosaurus look.
Yeah, I mean, the really long neck is what makes them the most dinosaur-like, I think, you know? But, I don't know what else they could be, you know? They're very peculiar looking.
It could be a fantasy animal that they've just imagined, or it could be just a very, very, very stylized everyday animal that we are just too dense to decipher what it is. They might go, it's a cat, obviously. Can't you tell by the long
neck?
Cats
are famous for their long necks, yeah.
There's another one here which is similar but completely different.
Right.
It is this kind of backwards facing but also gripping beast style here. This is my favourite one. I call it gripping lobster. Because it looks a bit like a very, very stylized lobster or crab. It's got a very kind of Dr. Zoidberg look to it.
It does, yeah.
And I don't know what this is supposed to be. No. I did look up a description of it that one of the archaeologists made, and they had this very, very detailed account of, you can see the legs here and here, its head is here, the tongue is sticking out, and I cannot see any of that.
No.
It's a beautiful little work of art here. That one of these as well, I should point out, is so tiny, I just can't work out what it was used for. Maybe it's a child's one. You never know.
Oh, that's cute.
We do think about, oh, yes, the men in the Viking Age are doing this and that. There are toddlers as yeah. well, of course. We have to remember. And they're wearing tiny outfits too.
Cute. So next we've got belt buckles, haven't we?
Yes. So Vikings wore belts, partly to keep their trousers up, I would imagine. Also, they're what they're hanging these various objects from, like the knives and the home stones that we looked at earlier.
Yeah.
Once again, a lot of these were found. There were 100 buckles Ooh. And buckle fragments, most made of iron, some made of copper. We've not put all on display, thankfully. No. Just a few are here. We realise that nobody wants to see 100 near-identical metal belt buckles. Now, all the examples from Coppergate are very, very plain. Mm-hmm. These are not decorated. They're D-shaped. They'd be at the ends of belts, straps, and harnesses.
Yep.
They're found across the whole dig sites. I imagine everyone's wearing a belt of some description. Maybe not always a leather belt. It could be more of a fabric belt or something like that.
Yeah.
But once again, a lot of these are clustered around that one Viking Age household, the blacksmith's house, we believe. So these are probably made by the metal worker on that property. Metal workers don't just make exciting things like swords and armour. They also make things like belt buckles.
Yeah.
But very rarely will someone say, I am the belt buckle smith. none of our staff have that as their character, I believe, here at Jorvik. But they should. It's
they
a very
should.
Important member of the community.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, these are at the end of the belts on somebody's outfit, very much like a modern day belt. Some things haven't changed over the years.
No.
They could also be used on things like harnesses for horses as well, it should be pointed
yeah.
out too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Other end of the belt though, things are a bit different.
Yeah, so I've seen these on the, you know, our Vikings working at Jorvik most have these on the ends of their belts. Little decorated kind of metal belt ends, you know?
Yes.
But we don't have those today.
No, not often. You sometimes do, but they're very plain.
Yeah.
I think I've got one on a belt for my shorts I wear at the beach, and it's just a plain 1 centimeter thick strip of
yeah.
some sort of metal. These ones are beautiful.
They are. They're gorgeous.
Quite ostentatious. I wore one of these when I was at the beach or something. So we call these strap ends. Multiple examples were found across the sites. The ones that we've got here are the examples made of kind of non-ferrous metals, things like copper alloy and lead. Seems to be their favourite metals,
yeah.
copper alloy and lead. There were examples found made of bone, antler, and iron as well.
Right, okay.
So these are probably a little bit fancier than the bone ones. You could carve that at home yourself, of course, whereas a professional metal worker has made these. Each of them is unique as well, with a different art style on it. And the art styles can be very useful because you can look at the cultural influences and also work out the date each object comes from as well, as
right.
different art styles are common in different time periods within the Viking Age as they evolve over the decades and centuries. So on the top right, there's a very, very thin one, mm-hmm. very, very small, made of lead, so yuck, poisonous. Got a weird animal head at the end.
Yeah.
Bulging eyes. It's a bit slug-like to me, this
one. I was
going to
say snail or a slug, yeah.
Maybe it's a dragon, you never know, some ferocious monster, or it could be a slug. Or maybe it's a stylized animal we can't possibly imagine, it could be a cat, who knows. This is a very Scandinavian art style. There's a lovely knotwork pattern running through the middle of it. So
yeah.
it looks very kind of classic Viking.
It does, yeah.
But then we've got this other one here, a larger one on the shelf of this display case. It's much wider than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The top of it, where it would attach onto the belt, this bit here has got a ring and dot pattern on it. Not quite symmetrical, again, which bugs me.
Yeah,
I wish they had more
I
symmetry,
know.
But I'm not a 10th century artist, am I? But then there's also this kind of vine-like foliage pattern kind of running through it.
Yeah.
And the metal worker has enhanced this by making it open work with a pattern of holes through it, presumably done by drilling through the metal to enlarge the holes. And there are parallels to this from other sites in York, like at Lloyd's Bank on pavement, where the big poop was found. and also variations of this style are known from the south of England, and sites in Winchester and Canterbury. So this suggests more of an Anglo-Saxon English art style or fashion.
Right.
Which dates it a bit later to the late 10th or 11th century. Then there's this solid example.
It's beautiful.
So this other strap end, it's nearer that first small one I mentioned. It's got what looks like a sunburst in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Then there's acanthus leaf ornamentation surrounding it. And this art style indicates, again, a 10th century date, but suggests a link to the Carolingian Empire. So that was based in France. So this has either come from France or a nearby country, or it's a copy of the art styles that were used there.
Yeah.
And the closest examples to this are found in Belgium and the Netherlands. So we've got a few different kind of cultural influences here.
Yeah.
On a piece of metal that's ultimately there to stop the leather on your belt from fraying.
Yeah.
And it shows that Viking York, it's not just influenced by Scandinavia. This is a very, very well-connected international trading hub. And the Vikings, they're very open to cultural influences from mm-hmm. a wide variety of cultures surrounding them in the North Sea area and wider Europe. And the Vikings, they seem to be very keen to keep up to date with fashion trends, I think.
Yeah, with their kind of dupes of like name brand things or gold things, you know, like it's just, they seem to be very conscious of the way they look and how they're presenting to other people.
Mm.
Now, there was something that, of course, caught my attention straight away in here. These are very recognizable. I see rings.
Yes, there's a selection of 10 rings displayed here. For wearing on fingers, I should point out, because the Vikings wear neck rings and arm rings as well. They love their rings, don't they? The style of these rings is actually very similar to arm rings and neck rings.
Yeah.
They're made in the same style, so they're miniature versions of those, mm-hmm. produced using the same techniques and the same decorations. So, for example, some of these are made by twisting rods of metal together.
Yeah.
Or they're decorated in that ring and dots pattern we see elsewhere. And once again, most of the rings found at Coppergate are made of cheap metals. a lot of these are made of copper alloy brass.
Yeah.
So I'm fairly sure turns your skin green.
Yeah.
That's from personal experience. I bought a lovely replica of one of these and then stopped wearing it after a week because I had a green finger. Which I think highlights once again the people of Coppergate are not the wealthiest people in Viking Jorvik. They love their knockoffs. I think.
Love that because that still feels so modern to me. I have had many a ring I bought from Claire's that's turned my finger green, you know? so this feels so relatable to me.
I should point out a few examples were made of silver. So there are some people who can loosen the strings on the change purse just a little. But along with silver, do you see these shiny pieces over here?
Yeah.
This is gold.
Ooh.
There's not very much, though.
No.
It's a very, very tiny amount of gold displayed here. We've got a stud from something. Something that might be an earring, maybe. A tiny amount of gold here, which is probably from a decorative filigree on a brooch. And much further along in the gallery, in our textile case, you'll see a tiny bit of gold that was woven into something made of fabric.
Yeah.
That is the entirety of the gold from the Coppergate collection.
Wow.
We often associate the Vikings with treasure hoards, don't we? This is a residential street, unfortunately, so we don't have massive amounts of gold. And gold was very valuable in the past, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
Gold is still valuable today. But gold actually is nowhere near as valuable today as it was in the past.
Right.
Today we have access to gold reserves from all over the world. Mm. So if you go to the jeweler's shop around the corner, that gold may have come from America, it may have come from Australia.
Right.
The Vikings don't have access to those resources. Gold is so rare, it wasn't even used for coinage in Britain at this point. It's just so impractically valuable.
What could you buy?
A billion-dollar bill or something.
You have to scrape off a tiny bit of gold to buy something,
The only examples of gold coinage, I think, that exist from this part of the world is diplomatic gifts. I think kings would mint gold coins for the Pope as a present, that sort of thing. So, not much gold here at all, and you're not going to throw it away. I don't know why these bits ended up buried in the mud.
But I'm sure someone was distraught that it happened, though.
Yeah.
So, lastly, we've got some quite interesting-looking objects here. What are they? They're quite big, aren't they?
Yeah, so in my opinion, these are much cooler than the gold. Gold is cool, gold is exciting, but these are bigger, practical, decorated objects. So we've got two here, and they look a bit kind of like wishbones.
Yeah.
But big. These are spurs for riding a horse.
Ah, like cowboys.
Yes. But also, they look nothing like cowboy spurs. No, they don't. They don't have those kind of spinning...
The spinny things. Yeah, yeah, no.
We have two examples displayed here. Five were found at Copper Gates. I think there was a sixth.
There must have been.
Unless there was a one-legged horse rider. You never know. They're shaped a bit like a wishbone, which you'd strap onto your feet.
Yeah.
There's a little spike at the back protruding, and you prick your horse into action with that.
Right, okay.
So these are very, very practical objects for horse riding. So much like how the knives and the stones and the pins, they're all very practical objects.
Yeah.
But these ones have been decorated, very richly decorated, with tin to look like they're made of silver.
Another dupe.
otherwise, these are made out of iron. So again, we've got all of these like cheap base metals here that look very, very beautiful.
I love it.
So I think based on the fact that so much of the stuff we have here is kind of knockoff, these are all base metal copies of fancier examples known from elsewhere, I would question whether could someone on this street actually own a horse?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I've been on the ride many, many times, and it doesn't seem like there would have been a lot of space for a horse.
Yeah, horses need a stable, don't they?
Yeah.
Horses are greedy. You need to give them lots and lots of food.
Yep.
A city centre is not an ideal place to raise a horse. So I don't think the people of Coppergate are trotting around on their horses.
No.
I don't think they can afford it.
No.
Horse bones were found here, butchered for meat.
Yeah.
Or made into ice skates as well. The houses that we find here, they're like studio flats.
Yeah.
So what I think we have here is a very skilled metal worker producing these spurs, maybe making the lovely decorative brooches and the strap ends as well. And they are selling these to much more well-to-do Vikings.
Who don't live on Coppergate. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. They're out shopping. They live on the other side of town, maybe near the Minster. Minster seems quite posh up that end of the city. They see these beautiful spurs and they buy them. The upmarket clientele of Viking Age York.
Now, I think I'm right in thinking that these aren't the only kind of personal items we've got on display here.
There's a lot more to show, yes.
I mean, some really amazing kind of little personal items are in the very next case.
Yeah, next one over it. Lots of little objects worn on people's outfits.
Yeah.
Lost in the mud for 1,000 years.
So I think we'll definitely need to talk about the items in the next case along very soon. We've got some quite interesting episodes for our listeners coming up. So they'll have to tune back in, I think, in a couple of weeks for us to talk about the next personal items case.
If you liked this episode and want to learn more about the Vikings, then come visit Jorvik Viking Centre, where you can enjoy the sights, sounds and smells of the Viking Age. You can book your tickets at jorvikvikingcentre.co.uk.
Don't forget to rate and review That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast on your podcast app. And if you enjoyed the show, share us with a friend. It's the best way to help support your favorite history podcast. To contact us for more information or ideas for future episodes, you can email us on podcast@yorkat.co.uk.
Thanks for listening to That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major podcast platforms.
That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast is a production of the Jorvik Group and York Archaeology, hosted by Miranda Schmiederer and Lucas Norton.
Researched by Lucas Norton, produced by Miranda Schmiederer, Lucas Norton, and Gareth Henry.
Sound designed and edited by Miranda Schmiederer.